You need to build a website. You need to build a website. You need to build a website, but you just don't know how. Let me tell you, okay? You need Squarespace. Why Squarespace? Because Paul Scheer uses it. All right, don't listen to Carly Kloss and our bullshit. Listen to me. I know the website building platform that you got to use, and it's Squarespace. Why? Because Squarespace makes it easier than ever to launch your passion project. Whether you're showcasing your work or selling beautiful products of any kind, Squarespace can support you. It's so true. I've made 3 websites on Squarespace. Each one of them is easy and fun and a little bit different. And what I love about Squarespace is this. Beautiful templates that allow you to customize just about anything. You can make a beautiful website yourself within minutes. And if you get stuck, their 24/7 award-winning customer support is there to help. Head to squarespace.com/bonkers for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code bonkers to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. We're talking podcasts, and I am so excited to talk to you about this podcast. This is right up my alley. Look, I think we're all saying it. Podcasts are kind of like the new TV, right? Well, what if your new TV show had a hilarious sci-fi show on it? Like a really good one. We don't have that, all right? We want that. And what if I told you that the stars of this hilarious show are Felicia Day, Colton Dunn, Janet Varney, and Steve Berg, all right? Voyage to the Stars is the show that we need to talk about here. It is a sci-fi sitcom for your ears. They started with a great script, handed it to a bunch of funny people from shows like The Good Place, and then they let them improvise. Like I said, it has Felicia Day, Colton Dunn, Janet Varney, Steve Berg, and here's the gist. A crew of misfits board an alien spaceship and wind up on the wrong side of the universe. Each episode, they try to get back home. It's funny. Check it out. Look up Voyage to the Stars in your podcast app and subscribe. You will be so happy you did. It's got all the things that you love about Spontanean Nation with all the nerdy shit of sci-fi. It's so right up my alley. I can't even tell you. And the sound design and the production of it is so, so good. Check out Voyage to Stars wherever you listen to podcasts. John Cusack, Adrian Brody, and Jackie Chan. It's like The Hangover all over again, but in ancient China, as these guys learn to build a wall, do some courtesy killings, and make the world's first Transformer. We saw Dragonblade, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Did you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Paul Scheer, your host, joined, as always, by my co-host, Jason Mantzoukas. How are you, Jason?
Paul, I did not care for this movie. I just spent my morning watching it.
It's a tough one
we
to
were
get
made
through.
To watch this movie by our guests today,
yes.
Which is challenging my fondness for them.
Well, you'll be happy to know, Jason, this is the first movie that we've done, first Chinese language film that we've ever done on the show. So that's a very
That's big, pretty big.
Yeah, it's a huge accomplishment.
That's pretty big. Starring John Cusack and Adrian Brody.
Oh, man. I don't even want to.
I have
don't even,
so many.
Yeah, so much.
So much to talk about in what is.
Yes.
I mean, unquestionably, one of the foremost features of the last few years that depict the Dragon Blade, the famed Dragon Blade.
Is there a Dragon Blade in
is
this movie?
Is there a Dragon Blade, Paul?
I don't
that
think
is
there is.
That is my question as well. Is there a Dragon Blade?
We are going
Here
to get into it.
Here are words that are never said in this movie, Dragon Blade. They're not spoken separately. They're not spoken together.
Never heard the term Dragon Blade. I thought there was going to be a special sword. There is
I
not.
I thought so too. There is even a special sword given at one point, and I was like, here we go, Dragon Blade.
Nope, not a Dragon
Nobody
Blade.
Says it. Nobody says, here's the Dragon Blade. I'm giving you the Dragon Blade. Nope. Congrats, you've earned the Dragon Blade.
Or is there a magical Dragon Blade?
Nope.
No. Not even a ceremonial Dragon Blade.
No. I hated this.
All right, well, let's bring in our guests, the people responsible for this movie. And
responsible for making it. Responsible for making us watch it.
Well, hold on. Oh, we will see.
Did our guests finance this
yes.
movie?
Yes.
Is our guest today the nation of China?
Yes. They are Chinese nationalists who are here with an agenda of entertainment for all. All right, so we have two guests.
Are we
today.
A mouthpiece for China?
Jason, all I want to tell you is that
show now underwritten by Foxconn?
You know, it's ad-free still, but we do have to say about 12 positive things about China, the government of China, and the history of China every episode.
Well, this is very awkward.
Yes, it's not awkward at all. They pay great money. The Han brothers. Are here. Yeah, the Han brothers. I love their logo before the thing starts. All right, we have two guests today. You know our first guest as one of the stars of Good Girls Revolt and the AMC show Dietland. She was also in a movie with me that came out on DVD last week called Summer 03. Please welcome Erin Dark. How are you,
Erin? Hey, guys. I'm good. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Erin, I wrote this down when we were doing that movie together, and Avril Halley, the person who helps us pick all of our films, she's like, oh, I remember. And so it's her memory that can also be faulted for this.
No, but I remember at the time I said, if we ever get to do the show, I claim Dragonblade.
I like that you tried to squat on it as if tons of people were like, we gotta do Dragonblade.
The 2015 Mandarin film.
Brad Pitt was like, I wanna come on and do Dragonblade, guys. And we were like, sorry, bro.
I claimed it. I'm sorry, guys, I claimed it. But I have spent the last year going like, oh, fuck, what if it's a really good movie and I've forgotten that it was a quality film?
Had you not forgotten the top three people on the call sheet?
I mean... But, you know, I started to doubt it. I was like, I do remember Adrian Brody was giving a lot.
He is.
Boy, does he ever.
He is acting, and
Capital A acting.
And a lot of whisper acting. But you are not fully guilty in this because it was a joint decision. Our next guest is someone that you might have seen on stage or in film. And more recently, his brand new TV show, Miracle Workers, just premiered this week, and it airs every Tuesday at 10:30. Please welcome Daniel Radcliffe.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
How dare you, you turd.
I was also worried, like Erin, that I would have misremembered this film. I did not think maybe it's good. My thought was that it wouldn't have been as entertainingly crazily bad in the ways that I love a movie to be than it was.
I mean, five minutes in, because this was our second time watching it. I feel like I should state that for the record. We had watched it
and
before.
And did you watch the 2-hour and 12-minute version or the hour and 43?
No, we watched the American release.
Wait a minute. The Chinese version is 20 minutes longer.
Yeah.
I think I watched a longer version.
Well, did you watch the bookends with the two Chinese scientists?
What?
What are you talking about? Wait. I have it.
There are two Chinese scientists?
Yeah. So we
flash forward?
Yes. So the movie starts in now.
Is there a Dragon Blade in what you saw?
No Dragon Blade. But
they cut out, I don't know.
A lot of satellite technology. You know they say you got to
kill your babies. We got to cut this Dragon Blade out.
It occurred to me.
Whoa!
It makes no sense because...
Wait, I was surprised by the screen. Why are you surprised by the screen?
We never use the screen.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
This is brand new.
Yeah, this is
very exciting. There's a screen in the studio now so we can watch clips. Huge development.
Yeah, this is a big deal.
Here at Earwolf Studios. You guys are very lucky to be here for this.
So basically, I will just do a little...
I don't believe in rewarding you for making us watch this movie. We should have come here and watched it all together.
Oh, yeah, the...
I have been so happy to do that.
Instead of me standing in my kitchen fuming.
Well, it's not a morning movie.
No.
It's not,
no.
I will say, I feel like
I
it's
have an
better.
Update, Daniel. It's not an evening movie either.
You do need to take a break.
This is a movie.
Like, how long after waking up did you start
in
watching
me,
this?
I started it in bed. I started playing. Thanks. It went through my whole morning with me.
Not to call you out, Jason, but you are a guy that, if given your druthers, you start your day a little bit later. So this is...
I don't know what you mean.
I
started it first thing this morning when I got up at 10 o'clock.
But like, so adding to that, you had to get up a little bit earlier than you normally would like. You then were forced to watch this movie, which I believe needs an intermission because there was a certain point where my brain was like, and enough. It was like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I took a 15-minute break and I was able to enjoy the last 30 minutes.
Wait, so with an additional 20 minutes, you still didn't know what was happening?
Oh, I didn't watch that version.
Oh, okay.
I have just seen
just
this
have
version.
Because I did wonder, because there's a point in this film where it goes so deeply off the rails that I was like, I do not
do you
know what's
when
happening.
It fades in?
Yeah.
Fade in. Well, movie yes. goes off rails.
Yes. Right.
But that's also, that's one. So the film starts with two random shots.
Yes.
One of Jackie Chan, which it then yes. transpires at the end, is from the end of the movie.
Correct.
That is then placed next to a shot of John Cusack from just another point in the
from
movie.
Like 20
which
minutes
is later
it.
On. Which is later on. And then it just, yeah, there are so many random, like, jumps in time on
there's
a cross time.
Jump
and a lot of that weird slow-mo. It's like, yes. why are we slow-mo?
I feel like John they Cusack just gave people footage and said, I don't know, make a movie out of it if you can.
Did you guys
see what you can do with this?
But did and
you
yet think there is so much money yeah. clearly has gone into it.
It is the biggest film that has ever been made by Chinese money
no.
in China.
What?
Yes, $65 million. So not on American money level, but on...
No, no, that's huge
but
budget.
Yeah. Like with the amount that they pay extras, that's probably...
right.
And also,
and it sounds like it was very unpleasant to shoot.
No,
did
I
they
mean,
actually build that city? I'm believing they maybe built a city.
They built those walls. They built those special cranes. They did everything. That was all practical.
I heard that the Chinese film industry is just an excuse to build infrastructure. And that's all they're doing
all
is just
the
building.
Movies are about finishing
it's so
cities.
Beautiful.
We got to finish these cities. And then let's shoot a movie about it.
And then tourism comes in because you have to visit the sites from the film.
Yep.
But I will, just to talk about that opening. Because
by the way, I would totally go on a group trip that goes to the sites of this film.
Yeah.
Well, you meet... You know, Jackie Chan and John Cusack. And I think in the beginning, oh, this is what the movie will start here. Like, they've made peace and we're moving forward.
No.
And then you're like, oh no, not at all.
No.
It's something.
What's this movie about?
That was a flash forward.
Yeah. I mean, then you
and
get
then
into
back.
Like a fight scene that seems to be brought about by like. There seems to be a lot about trade and taxes
yes.
early on and customs.
Oh,
and
right.
Yeah, the Silk Road is, listen, a lot of shit goes down on the Silk
right.
Road.
People
what
are
what is a Silk Road fighter? That's my question.
The Silk Road. The Silk Road Protection
the,
Squad.
Yeah, Silk Road
squad.
Protection Squad, which I'm sure was the official title.
The word
they're terrible,
squad.
Right? They lose
imagine.
Every fight. The Silk Road Squad loses every fight.
So, and that's what was my other question at the beginning. So that, like, so there's this huge face-off between these two warring nations, and then Jackie Chan comes in, and he fights as with the Silk Road Protection Squad, and he fights the
as a third.
Lady Moon.
He comes
yes.
in as a third person, like
he comes
to
in,
intervene.
Yeah, as like an
right.
intermediary.
Because he's a fighter for peace.
Yes,
well,
he says
everybody,
several
yes.
times.
Everyone who
he
is
has
a Silk
many
Road,
weapons.
Every Silk Road fighter fights for peace because they believe that it's better to make friends than foes.
Yes.
But yet they are like
heavily
bad,
so many
yeah,
weapons.
Heavily armed. Yes.
Heavily
so,
armed.
Yeah.
Many
so many
weapons.
And
they
deeply
fight
trained
yeah.
at using them.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, there are at least two moments in the film where I think Jackie Chan says, stop fighting and don't fight as he is fighting.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They go through such lengths to show that he is such a nice guy.
An amazing guy.
Yeah.
An amazing guy.
What
thing.
A great
by
dude.
By the way, I will say, and I have it in my notes.
And a wonderful singer.
Like I should have done it on my phone.
The movie. Get in the business,
wrote,
buddy. You gotta
Daniel
those
left
notes
his
on
notes
your phone.
In his hotel.
I wrote notes and they're not here.
He has so many notes.
There is like the movie starts and it is. It's this fight scene and I was like, oh no, this is terrible. This is gonna be awful. Jackie Chan showed up and I was like, oh right, Jackie Chan is awesome.
Yeah.
There is something that is so compelling
yeah.
and so instantaneously fun and funny. And even though
well,
it's a serious moment or whatever, he still finds moment of levity and start. There's stuff in the Jackie Chan stuff that I always enjoy.
But do you think
maybe
that,
it's nostalgia?
But no. Didn't the levity kind of undercut the seriousness of
well,
what
no,
we're
people,
doing?
Yes, people are dying. Lives are at stake.
Yeah.
But then we go into these like comedy of errors
yeah.
moments.
Yeah.
Like when he just grabs her boobs.
Yeah.
In one of
yeah.
the
Which
songs.
Goes
yes.
on for so long. It's like he grabs her boobs. They both notice. They both look down.
She slaps
they
him.
Both
yeah.
look up. She slaps him. And then he's
yeah.
like, maybe I should stop grabbing her
yeah.
boobs.
And then he takes off her veil. And this is maybe where I don't know that
yeah.
much about Chinese culture, but now they have to have sex?
No,
I
well,
don't.
Yes. She
okay.
just then strips in front of him.
Right.
But
next
when does that
we
take
see in a flashback?
When does,
fire.
That, when does that take
I
place?
I forgot about that spit take.
Yeah.
Right
yeah.
after
yes.
the fight scene, right?
So where do they go after the fight? Where do they go?
Back to her tent.
Why?
He
so he can
go,
return
no, he
the
goes,
veil?
Yeah, he goes back to her tent to return the veil, and then she strips for him like you
now,
do, Jason.
Let me ask you this,
but she
Aaron,
takes a drink like...
Do you think that her house, where he returns the veil, is 2 miles from the open desert?
Or no, yeah.
Did they ride for a week for him to return the veil?
He's a very nice guy. He wanted to return the veil. He went there. She responded.
You left these earrings at my house.
And it is, again, we see them, we see that veil scene in a flashback as he is riding away.
Right.
Like he's riding away from, I think, the initial, though, I guess, from that.
The language of film. Like giving him shit.
Also, but the language of film here is very bad because we see a scene, the next logical scene is the stripping scene, and then it's the horseback scene. But what we see is fight scene, horseback scene, stripping scene, horseback scene.
Yes.
So, why? Why don't we tell this in out of order?
I have a big question about, like, so Jackie Chan intervenes in that initial fight, fights that lady, and then
somehow the conflict's resolved?
Like, is that it? Like, what happened to the initial dispute?
Yeah. If she gets her veil ripped off,
it's then, everyone go home.
Yeah, it's almost like flag football.
If he
gets the flag,
if he wins a fight,
you tackle that person.
If he wins a fight,
but
does that just
side,
it? He's like, okay, peace reigns, I win.
But the other side that was trying to fight her
they
got nothing.
Left.
No.
They didn't even participate in the fight, but they were apparently like,
I'm confused about like the idea of Chinese warfare because it seemed like I want to get into it.
You build an army and then you send one person.
One.
I mean, there is a theory.
It's like Pokemon
that,
fighting.
Yeah,
and
then
I think there is a theory that people are like massive armies used to just like meet opposite each other and then kind of like send out their strongest guys one at a time.
But
I don't think
really,
it was quite that order.
Okay, yeah,
conflict
it was very like, yeah.
The like, that's the thing. If you send your two strongest and one of them beats the other one, does your army just go like, they beat that guy, so I guess we go home
now? We're out of here. I thought that as well. I assumed, and mistakenly, now that I've heard that it's a $65 million budget, I was like, well, they don't have the budget for big, giant group battles.
No, they do.
So that's why they're like breaking it down into these smaller one-on-one combat missions that I was like, later on, that happens in almost every single fight scene. It comes down to just mano-a-mano fight.
But if it was better fighting, I'd be all in. If it was like Crouching Tiger, if it was, you know, even like raid level fighting, it's kind of neither here nor there. It's like, oh, it's fighting. Yeah. It's not as cool as 300. It's just sort of like, it's a melee of sorts.
I thought there were like a couple of really good moments. And there were like some like moments where you see like, oh, there's a really cool idea that like, I feel like they didn't want the film to be quite as dark as like there's one moment where literally there's a guy who's been shot through with like 20 arrows over backwards entirely propped up by those arrows, but they just like are panning off him from the word go.
I thought that was cool looking, I believe you're right. I think they tried to veer away from true violence, true gore, anything that was like anything
there's
and
no
that's like
blood
the lightness
besides,
too
besides I mean spoiler alert John Cusack's eyeballs being ripped out
his closed eyes with some fake blood on them?
That scene either took 10 minutes to shoot or 2 days.
Everything that John Cusack is in this movie felt like, you know, they do this thing where they're like, you know, we're just going to shoot the rehearsal, just so you get run it through. And that's what it felt like. It was like, I'll give you like 2 takes at the most. And it wasn't like he's not
his
trying.
Death,
it's just sort of like not trying a lot.
His death scene is astonishing.
I love his performance in this film.
Take me home.
Yeah. So much. Take me home. But
he didn't even tell him. He's like, when he says, take me home, how does he even know? He's totally blind.
He doesn't
blind.
Know what's going on. Yeah. There are so many instances. The kid, too, is reacting to a fight scene consistently as if he's watching it, only that child is blind. Yes. And he's like, oh, no.
Speaking, you mean the blind Chinese child whose poor hair was dyed?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that kid is... That kid,
I looked it up. He's for sure Chinese.
Voice of an angel.
Really?
Yes.
Also,
voice of an angel.
Not his part of it.
I think.
Wait, what?
Lips do not matter. He's fully ADR.
So was like the nanny stroke aide de camp whose performance is another
Falco.
Crazy part.
That character's name is Falco.
Is it?
I could talk about that performance for about 2 hours.
Falco does color commentary for some of the fights. Ooh, yeah, get in there.
General Lucius is fighting with the force of 1,000 men. He's like narrating the fight scenes for the blind child as if it's like a bedtime story. His performance is like Commedia dell'arte thinks. it makes Commedia dell'arte look like naturalistic acting.
Like subtle.
He also looks nothing like a Roman. They do a real weird job. John Cusack, just so if you've not seen the movie and you shouldn't, is a Roman.
We haven't explained this movie even remotely.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard.
There was a crawl at the beginning, not a crawl, but there was like text at the beginning to give you some context and information. I went back to it at a certain point to be like, what was this even about?
Well, by the way, that text is written so tiny and in the screen that my TV is not that far away from me. I was having a hard time going like, what is on this screen? If it was closer, I get it. But this is where the opening comes in.
It's 50 BC.
Well, the opening, it's actually 48, but in the American translation, they made it 50.
Really?
Just rounded it up.
Classic. Make it easy. Classic American move.
So the opening, I can play a little bit of it, but it focuses on
the scientists?
These are the two scientists. This kind of sets the tone of the movie way better. Like, if this scene was in there, I would have really liked it. So here we go. Oh, no, that's a bold statement. I wouldn't have really liked it.
Is that all it would have taken?
Just this. Okay,
oh,
so.
Wow. This is so totally different.
Yeah, so we open up.
Oh, this is amazing.
We open up on all these, like, Audis flying through, like.
That's a BMW.
Oh, BMW, sorry.
All right, I'm just saying, you know, they paid for these cars. Yes.
So we open up on the BMWs.
James says he'll float a stock offering on the market the minute we find Regan. Then we can excavate wherever we want. You know, most of the diary documents of how Jennifer established the protection squad.
Oh, I see.
How is he related to Regan? And why did they name this ancient city Regan?
Oh, whoa.
Find out.
Whoa, wait a minute.
Christian, another intersection ahead. Which road do we take? Let's split into three groups, keep each other updated.
So,
sharp, gentlemen.
This group splits up into three groups. They go on a big hike.
Oh my god, this keeps going.
Yeah, they find this lost city.
This is so crazy.
They go into the lost city. They find
actors. They got gypped in the American version.
I know. So, and they're, by the way, speaking in English.
Yes.
And
yes.
So that's and also odd.
Yeah, so why was that cut from the English version?
What I'm confused
no idea.
About
and
is
by the way, it does add some, like, this idea of Regum, which is like the whole city that they're building, the heaven on earth.
I was just going to say, is that the city that they built?
Yes.
Do they ever call it Regum in the movie?
The very end.
Okay.
They say, like,
I think at the very end, it's text on the screen. Yeah, tiny text.
They find Regum. They're like, what is it? Oh my god. And then the craziest thing happens. They scan the entire thing with satellites, play Mozart music, and then the satellite from outer space, you'll see, I'm just playing it out, beams lights and rebuilds the entire city through, like, virtual reality.
What?
Whoa, this is...
So then they're like, oh, this is it, and then they...
How does that technology work?
I have no idea. So basically,
is that a flash forward to the future from now?
Yeah.
This is further on.
This is 2073.
Yeah, right.
So now they have this city in front of them. Boom, we're back into the movie. And at the end, what we are led to believe, at the beginning of the movie, they're staring at a statue. At the end, they just go like, oh, now that's the story. But no one's told them the story. They can see the world through virtual reality and, like,
back,
let's
and
never tell anybody.
Do you pull back and they've been showing them the movie?
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's a very impressive satellite. It actually didn't just show them the city. It showed them this whole movie.
And they're like, this is a bad movie.
That is what a satellite does. A satellite could show them a movie.
Yeah,
right.
What it can't do is rebuild past structures.
And so this is how it ends. And this is...
Wow.
This is the end of the movie where... okay, so we join back with our characters.
Oh, yes, we have this 360 pan of
the eagle. We didn't get this.
Oh, yeah, so they go...
That was kind of nice.
So they see the whole city, how it's been destroyed, and now...
I'm really happy we can do this together, she says. Are they a couple now?
Yeah.
I'm really happy we can do this together.
Well... At least we ended on a good note.
What does that mean?
What,
why have they
up?
Ended?
Ended yeah. what?
Are they dying?
Aren't you in the middle of your job?
Oh, yep.
Look. Look at it go.
Did you guys find anything?
No, we haven't found anything.
What? No, I mean, there's literally a pillar behind you. I know you have
you
a
have
whole
like
3D mapping
a
thing.
A major
still,
archaeological site on your
well,
hand.
Why
saying,
would they not want to tell people?
They're like, we're keeping it our secret, and this is their reason. Let's see. She goes, no, we haven't found it. And then...
It's an enthralling fairy tale.
What is? You don't know anything.
Peace in harmony, one. Greed and ambition, zero. This land remains ours alone.
Huh.
Well, what do you say? We let him shine for another 2,000 years.
Like a week later, somebody else finds this city. Yeah. And they're like, fuck.
We could have.
And then they just go and frolic in the snow.
It's amazing that that embrace is meant to make us, like, it's meant to mean something to us after not being with those people.
They basically say we cannot, because this true story, which, by the way, that's the one thing we haven't talked about at all. It's based on a true story. They basically go, it is a true story, but it's not. Like, because that's their getaway from it. It's like, it didn't really happen, but it did. They're not letting people go there to look at this a city that represents heaven on earth.
They seem to selfishly imply they want to keep it for themselves. Which is a real dick move.
And the point of the story.
It's just an old structure. There's no, like, it isn't like, oh, we have to leave these people in this culture the way.
But also what it stands for is something that is truly a great message. Right. What it stands for is wonderful. It should be shared with the world.
Yeah, no. They're like,
this place that symbolizes harmony and peace. Let's hide it for us. keep it for ourselves. It's ours. It's our city.
So this the city that they're talking about, Regum, which is, I guess,
Regum.
That's where I do all my office space work at Regum. You rent those corporate offices.
That's what I consider gum that I get off the bottom of the table here.
Ooh, yeah, it's Regum.
Regum.
People. Let's talk websites. Let's talk web presence. Squarespace makes it easier to make your website than you ever thought. All right, here's the thing, people. Whether you're looking to start a new business or showcase your work, publish content, or sell products, Squarespace is the tool for you. PaulShear.com, UnspooledPod.com, CrashTestShow.com. These are all websites that I created. Oh, actually, how did this get made? Info.com, HDTGMinfo.com. And why do I keep on going back to Squarespace? It's not because they give me websites for free. No. They only give me one for free. And then sometimes they pull that back and I have to remind them, no, you gave me one for free. And then they give it to me again. But I like it because, by the way, even when I complain about they taking away one free website, they give it back to me. And that's the kind of responsive customer support you need. But it's not about me and bills. It's about me dealing with a company that makes it easy for me to get my ideas out there. I'm not a designer. I would love to think of myself as one. I have ideas and I want to articulate them. And Squarespace really helps me do it because they have these beautiful templates that allow you to be like, oh yeah, I want to do that from that and this from this. And you can kind of mix and merge. And whatever you create actually looks good on whatever platform you open it on. If you open it on an iPhone, it looks great. If you look open it on a computer, it looks great. It just is built for you to showcase your work, whatever that work might be. If you're a restaurant, a gym owner, if you're just a person who wants to take control of their own profile online, we all know that whenever we're meeting somebody we don't know, we Google them. We look up their thing. So why not be the first line of defense? I've always pitched this as the reason why you should be creating your own website, even if you don't have a business, because people want to understand who you are. And if you can get them first, then you actually are doing your first impression online, and Squarespace will help you do that in a clean, creative way that is optimized for mobile. Like I said, the domains, buying of them, so simple. And here's the thing. If you want to sell something, it's going to be easy. Their e-commerce functionality lets you sell anything you want online. So head to squarespace.com/bonkers for a free trial. I wouldn't be doing it with four different websites. I would do one, if I didn't like it. I got four on there. I love them all so much. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code bonkers, that's BONKERS, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/bonkers. Offer code BONKERS, bonkers. Today's show is brought to you by our friends at Simply Safe. Here's the deal. No one should feel unsafe at home, period. End of sentence. Fear has no place in a home, okay? That's Simply Safe's mission from day one. You might have seen their commercial about it during the big game this year. If you didn't, find it online. It's actually a good commercial. Simply Safe blankets your whole home with protection. Around-the-clock professional monitoring makes sure the police are on the way when you need them, and security sensors are tiny, blending with your home so you won't notice them. The Verge calls Simply Safe the best home security, and it's a Wirecutter top pick. I love Wirecutter. Every time I want to buy something, I go to Wirecutter to find out what they think. And when Wirecutter is saying it, you should trust them. You should trust me too, because it's actually a really simple, safe system to put, Simply Safe, in your house. But it's so easy to set up. And You'll realize as soon as you set up in your house, you're like, oh, no wonder 3 million customers already know that it feels good to fear less, okay? When the purge happens, you want Simply Safe in your house. Protect your home today and get free shipping on any system. And you will get that if you are a How Did This Get Made listener. Go to simplysafe.com/bonkers. That's Simply Safe, SimpliSafe, /bonkers. That's simplysafe.com/bonkers. Okay, so we established that the Silk Protection Squad, not great fighters.
I still don't think we've explained the plot
no,
of
we have
like,
still,
John Cusack's
still at the beginning.
Character yeah. is a Roman, and we haven't broached it barely at all.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's like a Roman with a good Chicago accent.
I mean, his accent work is just so great in that it is non-existent for him.
I mean, and like, he's just doing any modern day John Cusack performance. Yep.
Yes. It might as well be someone saying, "Hey, Lloyd Dobler, put on this armor. Well, you're a Roman now."
He was like Lloyd Dobler because he's doing like kickboxing stuff. I was like, "All right."
I went in quite deep on some press stuff that he did.
He watched a bunch of interviews.
I watched some interviews with him, and he seems really like into the idea of doing a martial arts movie, and was saying like all the reasons you would do a movie like this for, like, to work with Jackie Chan and to like get to do this cool stuff. Like, but then like I don't feel like he did that.
No, like, I feel like he was there for 2 weeks.
Like Adrian Brody, is in that last fight scene. It's like, yeah, you did some fighting. Like,
I believe John Cusack, showed up the day before and like was like, okay, what's up? And I believe Adrian Brody lived in China for 2 days.
But that's
no,
why
Adrian Brody
is in armor.
No, Adrian Brody is doing something. But let me ask you this, Aaron and Daniel, like the when you watch a movie like this and you're looking at people like that are. Some people are just not making a choice on accents. Have you ever worked in a situation where you've been like, huh, we're all doing this. This person isn't.
Yeah, I don't know that I have, but I've definitely like been aware of them on other movies. Yeah. Like there was like, there was some famous.
We've done a million movies where accents are not adding up. I mean, like Gods of Egypt.
But
I feel
at least
like,
people are
lying. But that's the thing. Dan and I were talking about this. I like to believe that, like, because Adrian Brody sort of doesn't come into the end. I like to believe that John Cusack got there and was like, "Well, there's some British guys, but nobody else really seems to be doing an accent." Yeah. And so he just did his whole performance, and then Adrian Brody got there and just started doing what he was doing, and Cusack was like, "It's too late now.
What are you doing?" I'm not going to loop my whole performance.
But it's also like a bold choice to be like,
I'm just going to be American.
Yeah. And it's almost like Chicago. It's like, it's not even like a subtle, it's like, it's just junk. It is
right.
Just
and that's
typical.
The thing. And in a way, there's no logic. Like, you might as well be as like, English as be American. Like, there isn't any, I mean, you're not going to sound Latin. You know,
right.
There's not a Roman accent that anyone's doing
these days.
But
his number two even has a British accent. Like, it just sounds like American, or sorry, that American accent just sounds so...
But that's
like,
why it's so good. That's why pulling up on a horse in armor and just being like...
so casual.
How does he introduce himself? He's like, Black Eagle Corps, Roman Empire.
And I was like, what? There's no way. At the end of the movie, when he says, send me home to Wrigley Field, I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
When the arrow goes through his throat, he goes, go Cubs!
You don't have the moment of him,
scene in this movie,
which I lost my mind the first time I watched it, and the second time just as much, is a scene where him and Jackie Chan are first. It's after their first fight, and
when he's in his eating spot.
This is my favorite scene. Okay,
when he needs a place to think.
Yeah, okay. he's found his place.
I need
to
food
think.
And water for my men, medicine for a child, and a place to think.
Here, this is it. This is here. I think you got it right here. Here
we need food and water for my men, medicine for a child. And I need a place to think.
This is 48 BC.
Yep. 48 BC. And then that scene to me is even more kind of trumped by the scene after Jackie and or after like the fight and they get into town, they're both on the rooftop.
No, this is Dan's scene. This it's is my the favorite. Scene that
just for purely
we
for
watched
the line
it twice last night.
Of, I mean, for the whole thing,
I'm
like,
concerned
even
about
the,
you.
The like the first,
these are our date night. Yeah,
like the first thing when he starts off and he's just like, I can't. There's one line he says very early on which makes me laugh, but the line that just I hope you have is when he grabs Jackie Chan's sword and Jackie Chan stops him and John Cusack just does a really like general, what? I just want to look at it. I've never seen a Chinese sword. And I am not doing any justice to how he does that line, but it is.
There's something so blasé about the delivery of that line.
There's something so blasé about so many of his lines.
But they also do a thing in that scene where, in the beginning of that scene, John Cusack is talking like, in my culture, we do this. Yeah. And then Jackie's like, oh, in my culture, we do this. And then all of a sudden, after three lines, like, so anyway, the stress and politics of my world really kind of bums me out. And then he's like, oh, yeah. Right? They just,
no, they all speak.
Jackie Chan speaks every language.
Yes.
And everybody, every native Chinese speaker can at least understand every language everybody else is speaking.
Yes.
Even if they don't speak it, they can understand everything that's being said all the time.
All the time.
Yeah. Maybe it's a skill you get when you work on the Silk Road.
On the Silk Road.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Is the Silk Road like
squad being used?
Squad is crazy. There's that. There's a bunch of anachronisms too. At one point, my favorite thing is when Adrian Brody says, when they come to him at the end of the movie and they're like, blah, 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 whatever, you're busted, whatever. And he goes, look, I just want to say. He says, look, comma, I just want to say.
I wrote down that someone says, hey.
Yeah. That too.
What? Hey.
Yeah, there's a bunch of like craziness.
Yeah. There's also a bunch of lines that I just don't understand. Like there's a bunch of lines that are said with huge significance that I don't. Like,
like Decimus has returned.
We don't know who this is.
Who's Decimus?
When all the Anchorman moment at the end when all the tribes arrive to fight and they just cut to the one after the other arriving.
And then you're like, you don't know who these people are.
No,
and then,
no idea who any of them
and
are.
And then when at the end, when that
they're the people, I believe they're all the people who, when he made the speech about like, when they were like, they all got bought off by Adrian Brody and he made the speech about we have to stick up and we have to blah, blah, blah. They were all the people that I believe had taken the money and now felt bad.
But the Parthian queen, when she shows up too.
That's a different story.
And the Falcons, guys. We have
the Falcons!
When this movie turns into Birdemic for a moment.
And they have just like telepathic control over hordes of Falcons.
Yeah, and the Falcons are coming in just hard at horses.
Well, we also have a lot of horses. Parthians can do anything with Falcons.
That's true.
But they also like make the choice to do close-up shots of birds not actually hitting the eyes of horses. Well,
missing.
That's a very hard thing.
Going down.
Which you think that's hard to do stay in the white.
Yeah. If you got it that close,
that
looked
great.
Yeah, or just CGI maybe just a little bit.
You clearly are doing a city later. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, it's a horse on a bird.
Help your battle scenes. Use your CGI here.
Why, by the way, is John Cusack an amazing engineer? Like,
how were they able to do that?
Like, my favorite things about the film are that, like, they are constructing a history where, like, the Romans and the Chinese meet, and then the Roman engineering meets Chinese fucking everything that they are brilliant at.
It's a really nice montage.
Combined,
I love that montage.
It's a really nice friendship montage.
That could be the movie. The movie could be about two enemies who come together to build a city to protect it from. That's a movie, right?
Yeah.
What this is a whole bunch of there are so many components and so many players and so much chaos in this movie that is fully unnecessary.
It feels to me like someone who watched like the last aired episode of Game of Thrones trying to describe it to you. It's like, there's a boy and he's got a thing and then there's other, and then there's a castle and then there's another group. It's
and
like
there's a dragon and there's a cursed sword. Wait a minute, neither of those are in this.
But it is, it just feels like a mishmash.
City building was the only thing that I actually remembered from the film. I remembered the city building, and so we were watching it last night and then the city got built and then they were having their musical numbers and then I looked and we were only 37 minutes into the film.
That's what I thought too, because I was like, wow, they did it. Wait, I mean, is this the end of the movie?
Yeah, like what?
What kind of thing was that? It's like, you have 15 days to rebuild the city. And then they did it? And even what they did in 15 days is insane.
They kept
stopping for karate demonstrations
and musical numbers.
One-on-one fights. lights.
Yes. And musical,
and like, musical numbers.
The fact that and crafts still has times.
I mean, they did a Flag Arts and Crafts Day.
I couldn't figure out, and this plagued me for a good portion of the movie. It didn't occur to me until the end of the movie they were building a city. I thought this was a prison. When Jackie Chan and the Protection Squad are sent to the Wild
Goose
Game.
It is a prison camp.
Yes.
It is. But it took me a while to realize, oh, this isn't... Because I was like, why are they having to build their own prison? Is that what this is?
Wouldn't you just not?
Yeah.
But also, when Jackie Chan goes there as a prisoner, he's like, all right, so I'm in charge. I'll go out here. I'll talk to John Cusack. I'll do this. He's like,
follow me. Prisoner. Let's do this. Like, I couldn't figure out what his role was either. Yeah. And then later, he just gets on a horse. He rides to his old house.
Yeah.
Why is he doing this? Why is he going home? Isn't he supposed to be going and doing a bunch of other stuff? And then, how is he allowed?
When Jackie Chan invents the airplane slide technology that you have.
Yes.
Like, so everyone knows that, you know, like when you an airplane maybe does a water landing, you'd pop out a door and a big yellow thing would come out. Jackie Chan makes that. And then has kids sliding down from a schoolroom and then makes it into a comedy scene.
You know what's interesting?
And that's one of those things that I loved, because like that's clearly one of those shots that for me, like the shots of people sliding down that thing were all slow-mo, because I feel like that just didn't look good in actual
No way.
It was just a lot less impressive.
I'm sure.
And also Jackie Chan has made himself the bottom of the slide, so kids are going feet first into Jackie Chan.
I also loved that this movie teaches us a very important lesson right in the scene following, where the little boy drops his school books.
Oh, yeah.
And because he goes back for his books in order to learn, his mother is killed.
Yes!
Or his teacher. His teacher/mother,
who's Jackie's wife?
Jackie Chan's wife, I believe, is the teacher at the school. And he goes back for his books, and she gets all full of arrows.
Yeah.
She gets all the arrows.
Any other object, it had to be his books. His books.
That kid will literally never pick up a book again. Lesson learned, kid.
I have issues with that teacher because at one point when she's protecting everybody from arrows, she just takes like a little bamboo plate, like a large plate. Like, everyone put the bamboo plates in here. Like, that's not stopping an arrow. Most of these people are getting 4 to 5 arrows in their back.
Yeah. There were so many arrows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, it's interesting that that's like a fine way to watch a person die. Like, everyone's kind of, we're all okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, arrows in this movie do amazing things. Like, there's that one shot where, like, the girl's inside the house. She fires one arrow into a horde of 100 people. She hits one of them. The other 99 drop to the ground.
They all fall down.
Go like, whoa, she's really good with
very
that.
Very sympathetic responses to good archery.
Like, you can still take her, guys. There's 100 of you.
Did you see that? She got him.
I just want to go back because we talked about the teacher, Jackie Chan. So when he beats that person in the beginning, the woman in the beginning, and she reveals herself, her naked body to him, she kind of takes a slug like, let's do this. She reveals herself. Then he takes a slug and does a spit take. And then he runs away. And then as they're riding and laughing, he goes, well, we've been gone for a long time. So wait, so is it like supposed to be like, well, I would have had sex with her if we hadn't been gone for long? Or is it like I'm committed to my wife? Like, what were they trying?
I think he was committed to his wife.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
Okay, yeah. so that's why he got out of there.
Yeah, because then he went home after that and they talked about how they were a great couple because they both love peace.
Okay, because I guess, right, because he's a peaceful guy.
That's what they had in college. You teach peace to different school children.
We're
a perfect match.
We're peace people.
It'd be like the movie Taken every time like Liam Neeson kills somebody, like, I'm such a nice guy.
It really is. That is this character, essentially.
I'm a good person.
Stop telling us that. Just do it.
But that's stop what I love fighting.
Like, friend and foe.
Turns friends into foes, which I feel like, again, that's inscribed on something in Chinese characters at the end. And I feel like maybe that is a phrase that is just much more evocative in Chinese.
Yes.
That turns friends into foes coming up as a subtitle. Well, it's not quite, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's whole songs about it.
Oh, well, yeah. And
there's
by the way,
whole songs about it.
Should we hear the... The Latin song. It's the little boy singing the song.
You mean the operatic little boy? Yeah.
Who is in the middle? Okay.
My favorite is when the first scene that introduces us to John Cusack and Jackie Chan, which is the scene in which Falco is narrating their fight for this little boy. Mm-hmm. The little boy then like has a fit or a moment or something, and Falco brings the boy in his arms to the fight that is happening in the middle of the desert.
Yep.
And screams, General!
And by the way, this
distracting John Cusack immediately.
Well, but by the way, like, The boy was just blind. He was not, like, sickly, or maybe he was. I don't know.
He
was very loose about it.
They had run away. They were in a desert. I think maybe they were all fucking thirsty.
Well, because remember those other generals were falling down behind Junkie.
Yeah. Just falling.
They held it up until they were in front of another army, and then they were like, oh, God, fall off this horse.
And by the way, what a terrible general Junkie was like. It was like, all right, we'll take this city. With these guys?
Yeah. Like, that was my problem. I was like, you got, like, 500 guys. This is a city.
Yeah.
You've been walking for days. But that's what. I mean, John Cusack is just that. Yeah, Jackie Chan is the world's best person who knows. Like, he arrives at Wild Geese Gate.
Yeah.
And just immediately starts saving people's lives and helping people. Adrian Brody is the most evil human being who just, like, drinks blood and blinds children. And John Cusack is just a guy.
He's just a guy. You've got this, like, character in the movie, this sickly child who's been rescued from certain death and all this stuff. And the kid just straight up gets killed. Boom. Adrian Brody shows up and Falco's like, see you later. I guess we're going to take a high dive off the top of the palace.
By the way, the sky plank. What purpose is the sky plank?
That's very Game of Thrones.
I thought the sky plank was going to come into, like, at the end when they're having that battle. Like, they're going to finally fall.
Falco! That's where you jump off things with a child.
I did get emotional with that scene, though. I was I don't know why. I think now whenever I see anything with children.
Yeah, because you got kids.
Fair enough.
The rest of us without kids were like, fuck this kid.
Yeah. I think there was a moment where I was like, if you have to go, like, that would be a beautiful way to go.
Jesus.
Oh, sweet and dumb.
Lord.
If they're pushing you off a sky bridge. Yeah,
no, absolutely. Oh, my God. He said, like, you will never hurt this child. Like, no, yeah. I mean, you meant that.
I'm going to hug him on the way down.
I will. Falco! I would love it if he screamed his own name. I'm dangerously close to letting that be the thing that that takes over for Geostorm.
Oh, yeah.
Someone screamed Geostorm at me on the Sony lot the other day.
Oh, my God.
I was like, what the fuck's going on? Who said that?
I had actually not registered that character's name was Falco. I was also on the IMDb page for this film last night, and there is apparently a character in this film called Eugene.
Oh, yeah.
Who is that? Is he in the 20 minutes I didn't see?
No, there is a couple of characters, and there's some people that are uncredited.
Really? Just Eugene?
Eugene.
Yeah. James Lee guy was uncredited as Eugene.
Huh.
Yep, just Eugene.
It's not
just
a Roman Eugene. Name. It's not a Chinese name. It's just, how do you fit into this?
That's just like one of the director's friends who happened to be on set. Like, oh, yeah, well, this is Eugene. That's Eugene. Eugene. The guy in jeans.
And then he went in and, like, changed his own IMDb. I don't know.
My favorite characters were Eugene, Sully,
Publius.
And Red Sun.
Wasn't that the kid's name? It was like
Publius.
Well, here's a little bit of his singing, just so you can.
Kinda... If he got to be a little bit older, he'd be Publius. But he died pubeless. Come on, guys.
And this is like a crowded scene. This is like after their dance sequence. And here we go.
Yeah, we just had some very rowdy.
So long.
And he sounds like he's in a cathedral. I mean, it is not. This is not like.
They built a city with good sound quality, Paul.
Acoustics were a big part of it. He's.
And this is the anthem of Regium, I guess.
Apparently, it's like an old Roman song that everyone joins in on.
I mean, but people are crying.
Yeah, Romans are weeping at the song.
And there's some very committed background in this. Actually crying. Like, there was one guy who was just like, "We don't even know who you are, and you are weeping."
That's Eugene.
And by the way, and getting back to this whole thing, like, this whole thing was brought on by, like, Jackie Chan in the middle of their hard work. They're like, "All right. Snack time's over. Let's do training." And then they do training. And then John Cusack looks at him like, "I don't like you." But but you're already friends. Aren't you already working together?
Yeah, but I don't know. I think that was more a look of like, okay, you're going to see what we've got now. We're going to show you some Roman stuff. I think they're kind of on the team by then, but it's
competitive
just like,
pals or whatever.
Yeah, okay, and so then the Romans do their stuff, which is a lot more drumming.
Yeah.
And then the Romans just kick the shit out of them.
Yeah.
All the time, and the Silk
Road. No, there's a little bit of back and forth.
Yeah,
a little bit, but I mean, they lose every.
No, Jackie Chan's guy wins the first one.
Yeah. Oh, okay, okay. I'm sorry.
And then there's a second guy that ends with a handshake. And the Roman guy who loves to fight. Like, that was a great fight.
I am Eugene.
the whole time, all I could think about was how they have 15 days to build a city.
Yes. and that they are
slave laborers.
I thought
it was one wall, and then when you see the final shot, when they look around, it's like, oh, that's like multiple walls.
Yeah. They couldn't have built in 15 days two of those devices they built in order to build this city. They are building wheels and gears. They're building... Yeah.
They built a giant construction equipment.
Yes.
The size of what you would see at a modern-day construction.
And then built a city.
Yeah. And also spackled it.
I love
that. That was the other thing. Yeah. They spackled it. They were like, all right, here we go. We're going to blend this in with the wall.
I love that they included things like, and this has to, my belief would be that this is based on how they actually built these cities.
Yeah.
And they made, that this is what part of it was. He goes, do you have gravel? Is there gravel? And I was like, wait, is this now just construction talk? Yeah. Are they now just talking about what materials are available to build with?
A lot of close-ups of blueprints. Yes. And John Q's really...
That's another one of my favorite shots is when they just say, it's clearly... It's just John Q's standing with two Romans either side of him, just going like, one of them says, everything's on schedule. And then they cut away.
Yeah.
And then later they go back to that same shot.
And John Q's just goes... Check on that. Someone was just like, "Just can you just like improv some building?"
They were just say constructiony just, like, things.
What I thought about this whole movie
was intercut it with like someone sketching it with a ruler and like blueprints.
What I thought about this movie was like, there's a moment where it felt like if this is a play, the lighting person got sick and was just trying to take lighting cues when they thought it would happen because scenes fade out. Like, you're like, oh, I guess that was the end of that scene. It was like, lights out. Like, I haven't seen a movie where, like, there's been so many fade outs. Like, fade to black. And then we're in another scene now. Like, oh, okay. It was a jar. Like, the film language is very jar.
And, like, the flash-forwards and flashbacks that, like, in the middle of all kinds of scenes, you just flash back to things that you already saw. We flash back to that kid singing that song.
Well, there's so many fade-outs. There's so many, like, there is, like, the...
And why would the Chinese people get so amped up about a song that... I mean, I would argue most of them don't understand, right? Because they're not speaking Latin. So, like, what's...
Well, that's the thing is, all the English-speaking people are now singing in Latin.
Yes.
Right.
Why does that
like,
make more sense?
Like, this must be, like, very confused. This is just called... It just illustrates... The movie is constantly illustrating how confusing it is.
Right.
By including things that just add to it rather than make it clearer, you know?
The one thing I will take away is that the Romans made a bunch of Rube Goldberg style devices, because at one point they show a dead body and it's like a magician's case, like a guy's in there but there's a bunch of swords inside.
Yeah,
it's
Adrian
like
that trick Brody you would got
see.
Creative.
Yeah, it was sort of like, oh, that's a trick that you would see on stage. It's like, oh, and I had no swords through me. But like the other one is like, yeah, we have like a thing where you put eight swords in one person's body.
We put a guy in a box and we just stick a bunch of swords in and it kills the guy.
Magic.
It's a great trick.
You can do it way easier. Adrian Brody also catches a sword with his bare hand.
And it's fine.
Good throw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A fucking sword.
That's why I'm like, those moments where I'm like, Adrian Brody is having fun here. Like, he came in, he's doing an accent, he's getting he's like, I'm the evil, I'm drinking blood, I'm blinding kids.
Yeah.
Like, I'm
I don't think anyone told him to lick human blood off his hands. I think in the moment, Adrian was just like, that's what this guy would
do. And somebody ran in from like off, after they called cut and was like, you should not be putting that in your mouth. don't. Where we are right now, that is not safe. That is real blood.
In the Gobi Desert. Yeah. They filmed this in the middle of the Gobi Desert and it sounds like it was hundreds of everyone wearing
in
real
the Gobi
armor.
Desert.
What?
Like it sounds.
Heat, sandstorms, heavy costumes, and long filming hours made this movie a really difficult endeavor.
Real sandstorms.
Yes, I mean,
which is funny because they can't really muster one in the film.
No,
they're all like, we have to get inside because there's a sandstorm. And then when they cut back later, there's like a few grains
it's
of
over.
Sand in the air.
Oh, man, that would be.
But like, what I like about Adrian Brody, and I think if you are going to do a movie like this, I actually think Jackie Chan comes across the best in this. Like,
absolutely.
Super fun.
Yeah.
I thought it was odd in moments where he is this big fighter, but he fights in the Jackie Chan style, which is like, oh, shit, what hell? Whoa. It's like that like kind of like cartoon, like, yeah. You know, and I'm like, well, that you are a fighter. Like, you should at least have confidence in there. But besides that, he's great. And I do like...
How old is Jackie Chan? When was this made?
I think he was like 61 when this
was
made.
Yeah,
this came out amazing.
It is amazing but to me how agile and effortless he makes what is very difficult stuff look.
Yeah. I thought they were trying to age him down sometimes and then to reveal, like, and that's what he looks like older. But I just think it was maybe the wig or something. He looked, I don't know, he looked younger than he looks on the poster even. Yeah. I don't know, but no, I think
some of the fight scenes are genuinely still, like, there are really cool moments in them, and you just have to go, like, wow.
I love
that guy is still doing.
I love the sword that shoots out from his hand.
That was great.
I just wish they'd done less slow motion with it. That was the thing. Yeah. I felt like anytime they actually found something cool, they either, like, put it on unnecessary slow motion or, like, cut away from it.
Just riding on the horse, John Cusack riding on a horse in slow motion.
So many people not riding horses for real.
Oh, yeah.
So many people. Like cut the frame cuts when you can't see the horse's legs, can't see nothing.
This movie probably killed more horses than that David Milch show Luck.
I do worry about, like, it's one of those things when you see Milch films that are, like, made that you're like, oh man, it's like when you watch The Birds now, you're like, oh man, Birds died. There was some poor
and Hitchcock was like, I don't care.
I always think about this, like, someone told me, like, on Return of the Jedi, like, a lot of the people in those Ewok costumes, they were like, oh no, our laws are a little bit more lax. It was like, just jump on that thing and fly down. It's like, I'm just an actor. It's like, you could do it. I was talking to one of the guys who.
So you're saying a lot of Ewoks died on that movie?
Not died, but the idea of just like, no, we could do it. Like, our friend Owen was in a movie in India and they literally lit a log on fire and threw it at him. And he had to raise it. Like, just as long as you run fast, it won't hit you. And he's like, it was the most scary thing. It's like running down a plank with a flaming log like 4 feet behind him. Like,
that's great.
But it adds to some of the great shots in this film.
Absolutely. You know, you want that real fear in those eyes. You want to know if you die in a movie set, it was for something as good as Dragonblade, you know?
We did an episode of The League where we were camping and there was a bear.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, this is not going to be worth it to die shooting an episode of The League because the bear is going to maul us.
It was a real good episode.
Great ep. But it immediately became clear we should not be doing this. That's a wild animal there, and the only thing between us and it is a man with a bag of Oreos. Like, who's trying to distract the bear with cookies.
Another episode of The League, we were shooting with a monkey, this ghost monkey, and the guy, the trainer,
monkey.
Hang on. A real monkey. We called him a ghost monkey in the show.
It wasn't the ghost of a monkey.
It was not a ghost of a monkey. But
it's very hard to hire ghosts.
I mean, well, it's tricky.
Hollywood, nothing can't be done.
It's true.
The trainer was in the trunk of the car that I was driving, and the monkey was loose in the car with us. And that was like the joke of the scene, like, this monkey. And I remember him saying to me, like, if he gets crazy, just give him these Sour Patch Kids and that will, like, calm him down.
They're laced with LSD.
And I was like, why are we giving him candy? And that's the only, like, that's between him mauling us?
Yeah.
Like, and whenever the monkey would stop the scene, would just start eating, like, pieces of the car. Like, and we were in there. And then you feel like this thing, like, I don't want to complain about this, but this does not feel safe. Like, you have a monkey and three people in seatbelts driving on an open road with a trainer in the trunk. Like, my ear will be in that monkey's mouth before that trainer is, like, able to maneuver his way up.
Oh, but isn't that, that's why we have the best job. Like, the stuff like that happens. Like, it's that's... Oh,
you will not, I will never be in a, I'll never be in a Mercedes SUV with a monkey in real life. So,
exactly.
You know what? Never say never.
Yeah.
Never say never. Who knows where this is going? This wild life.
I actually talked to a guy who did a documentary on Bubbles, Michael Jackson's monkey.
My friend fit Bubbles for a jacket once.
Really?
Yeah, he's a dresser and he came in, Michael Jackson sent Bubbles alone in a limo to get fit for a suit.
Well, this is what he was telling me. He was like, Bubbles had his own, like, hotel room where Michael was staying, and they're like, oh, go hang out with Bubbles. And they had taken out the bed and they put the cage in the center of the room where the bed was, and that's where Bubbles hung out. And you, like, you could take him out of the cage and watch TV with him and hang out with him, but, like, Bubbles had his own thing going.
Bubbles
on.
Arrived in his own car.
They made a doll of Bubbles. I remember that was a kid. Like, they had a, like, you could get it like a Toys R Us, like a gay, like a Cabbage Patch doll, but it was like Bubbles.
Whoa.
What?
Did you know
this? I didn't know any of this. This is wild.
Oh yeah, Bubbles is like Bubbles is like
Bubbles
a real
still alive.
No, I don't know.
No, yeah. Right? That's a very long
was there
time.
One Bubbles, or is that just like was it?
Oh right, was there like multiple animal, Bubbles? Like,
I would love
there
it.
There was
if,
only one Bubbles.
It's one of those things that, like, Bubbles keeps dying, and the handlers are on Michael Jackson. Like, we gotta get it. We gotta find another Bubbles. Of course, that's Bubbles. What do you mean, Michael?
What do you mean he's acting different? Oh, Matt, that's, yeah.
Ooh, that's very sad.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have much information about Bubbles, but
okay.
But this, I'm gonna try. I'm sure. But
and I heard that Bubbles played guitar on Beat It.
Oh, he wrote Beat It.
He wrote Beat It.
Yeah.
A lot of Michael Jackson songs are credited to Bubbles.
I want to watch that biopic now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really got to find it. He was like,
Motion capture.
Oh, no, I mean, like, I want to watch, like, the Michael Jackson one, but, like, that tells the truth.
Oh, yeah.
It's just those Bubbles writing all the songs.
There was 10 Bubbles.
Bubbles is just smoking a cigar, like, you listen to me. You're going to sing it, you're going to sing it good. Michael Jackson just traded his overbearing father for an overbearing the pet monkey that he had.
Yeah. Tell me you wouldn't watch that film.
Oh, yeah. So in. Guys, you need to up your fashion. You need to step up your suit game. I know you're thinking, Paul, I don't need clothes delivered to my house. Guess what? You do. And this is why. This is why I love this service. Black Tux is different. It's not about sending you a box full of expensive clothes that you don't need, that you have to buy, that you're going to go out of pocket for. This is about sending you a custom tailored outfit for an event that you can return. Okay, think about that. All right, we all get invited to weddings. We have to go to events. Sometimes you need a tux. Do you own a tux? Do you want to buy a tux? No. Do you want to go down the block to that weird tux shop? Absolutely not. Okay, this is where Black Tux comes in. They give you tuxes that would normally be wildly expensive to buy, and you might only wear once. They send it to your door. You get to try it on. Do you like the look? Do you like the fit? Do you like the feel? Great. Send it back to them, and then 14 days before your event, they're going to send it back to you, and you're going to have it. And then you return it a little bit after you wear it. It's fine. It's great. It's easy. And let me tell you, as a man, suit buying is expensive. And you kind of get caught in this rut of like, I got my blue suit. I got my black suit. I got my brown suit. This is a chance for you to try something, stand out from the pack. When you go out, look as good as you want to. Try things. Get that leopard print suit on. Look good in a tux. Wow, people at a party, make a first impression with what you're wearing and then who you are. And that's how Black Tux helps. It's so fucking simple. It's so easy. I've been begging for a service like this for such a long time for dudes because, you know, women have like Rent the Runway and all these other things. Guys just need things to get us a good look to our house. If you lost some weight, if you gained some weight, get the thing that actually fits your body so you don't look like you're cramming yourself in or it's hanging off you like you're like some sort of orphan in a Charles Dickens tale, okay? You get the suit, you wear the suit, you turn the heads, you send it back 3 days after your event. Shipping is free both ways. It's easy. It's peasy. I don't know what peasy means, but it's great. Get $20 off your first purchase. Visit blacktux.com. Enter the offer code bonkers. That's blacktux.com. Enter the offer code bonkers. That's blacktux.com. Offer code bonkers for $20 off your first purchase. People, you will love it. High quality suiting and tuxes for every occasion. I'm telling you, people, I've got people already writing in saying that this is like the best thing that we've advertised on the show so far, and I have to agree with it. They really are great. What else do we want to talk about? The John Cusack death scene. This is a place where they build prisons either really well or really shitty. They have one prison just a cage where your feet could come out. So that was a Fred Flintstone style prison where they all pushed it over a cliff.
Yeah.
Bad engineering. But yet John Cusack, who is weaponless, they have him like in a 3-part prison.
Yeah.
Which is like, why is he? He's not that dangerous.
Like, who were the guys who killed him? Who were like, when that scene before, like, who was he going to meet that were then the people that like strung him up?
This is when I was watching it and I was trying real hard, but I was like, I do not know what has happened.
This is where the film goes off the rails.
Like, once they build the city and they're like,
this movie is well off the rails.
But I understand what's happening before that.
I don't understand all the people and what their relationships are, but I understand, like, here's a friend and foe. They built the city together and they're happy. At that point, That's all I need, and I feel good. But then once it gets into this section, I'm like, who is this?
I understand that Adrian Brody wants to kill that kid.
Yes. Right,
like,
yes.
And they're brothers, right?
Yes.
And they're brothers. And
right, the kid is Adrian Brody's brother. Right.
Or cousin, or some sort of relationship.
I think it's his brother, too,
because his dad, I think.
Because they all passed over for the...
Why? No, because I think it was... Okay, so the
Bubbles died in 2009, just so
you know. Okay. R.I.P. Bubbles.
Well, that was... Quite.
He was 50 years old. He. Oh, what? Sorry. Oh, sorry. That was how old Michael Jackson was.
What are you talking about?
Oh, wait. Wait, so Bubbles did not go to Michael Jackson's memorial service.
What? Snub.
He wasn't invited.
Oh, no, he's still alive. He is.
So Michael Jackson died 2009.
Yes, sorry. I got a little confused.
This is a wild ride.
Yes, he is living in the center of Great Ape Sanctuary in Wachula, Florida.
That makes me genuinely really happy.
Yeah, he's alive and well.
I don't know why.
Oh. Wow. Holy cow.
But no, okay, so.
Yes.
So, Adrian Brody's dad was like, I think Adrian Brody might be a fucked up asshole.
I think Adrian Brody might be Adrian Brody.
Yeah, he was like, I think he might. So he was like, so I'm going to make my young, sweet kid with the operatic voice my ruler. And so then he made a treaty with the Parthians.
Right.
Being like, just want to make this treaty so you recognize this kid as my...
Do you want to hear his whole evil plan that he lays out in an amazing riff of exposition?
Oh, yeah. Great.
All right, here we go. Always. Here we go.
If I hadn't purposely let you escape, purposely, do you really think you and Publius would get this far? Who could blame me for pursuing you? I mean, thank you for the perfect excuse to bring my troops here. Mm-hmm. I had already plotted this with Huo's subordinate, Yinpo. Yinpo gave me the customs clearance document and the commander's seal.
Customs clearance document is said very dramatically several times.
And the commander's seal. They talk about these things all the time.
This to me is like the reverse bad like villain plan of James Bond. It's like, everything that happened for a reason, and there it was, and it was all me.
But none of it falls into place for you. Like, right. I don't know who any of the people he's talking to, talking about are. I'm not tracking commander's seals or tax documents. These are not the components
the customs documents.
As far as I'm concerned, I'm watching a movie about enemies becoming best friends and building a city.
Right.
And it is like,
not anymore.
It is like Adrian Brody, there is like a parallel whole movie going on, which we're not privy to for the first 56 minutes, and then he comes in fully doing that.
By the way, I would see. Yeah. I would happily watch another movie that is the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead of this movie, wherein we start with Adrian Brody and we arrive at this movie.
Well, let's talk about structure for a second. Is there is there any problem with starting this movie with Adrian Brody and that kid, and then telling that story? Because that seemingly is the story. That's
I
the
think
whole
if this
reason
is a Chinese movie, I suspect the story is about the Silk Road and not about like the Roman hierarchy of Roman
it's a weird
royalty.
But it's a weird way to start it, though, because it's like, all right, well, then to tell this story, we won't tell the whole first part of it until we're in the third act.
So that's
then
why
you get
they have
context
to do,
for the story.
That's why they have to do weird flashbacks and flash forwards of Adrian Brody.
This movie is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern because it's the inconsequential part of this story.
By the way, that, don't tell China that.
Yeah.
No offense, but like Paul speaks for Paul and Paul alone.
Sorry, Han Brothers. I did not mean to insult the film, which is a great movie.
I think Alibaba, who put money into this.
This movie has more production credits than the population of a small town.
It is clearly, you know, and in all the press for it, you get like John Cusack being asked, like, what made you want to do a Mandarin movie? And he's clearly there being like,
John Cusack is low key like making crazy fun choices now.
Yes.
Like he's in that Nicolas Cage territory where he's like, well, great. And I think
he's full blown Nicolas Cage in this. Which, I think he saw what Nicolas Cage was doing on Con Air and was like, oh, well, I get what I can do.
This is a story I tell all the time. When we had Danny Trejo on the show here, he said the most dangerous person that he encountered on that Con Air plane was John Cusack. He said, that's the person I'm most afraid of. He says, because when you look in his eyes, he's got something that's crazy in there.
Oh, really?
And you don't trust it. Yeah. That's Danny Trejo of that insane cast.
Yeah.
You got Malkovich, you got Buscemi, you have all these great people that are known for being like these wild cards. John Cusack, the guy who's in a suit and tie for the entire thing, is like, that's the guy. I was like, no, sir. Which I always love. I love that. Like, it's like he's not even doing an insane performance.
No.
I mean, John Cusack was the first person who made me try vaping.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, I overlapped with him for like 2 days on a film. And I was like, I like ran into him outside and he was like, have you tried this? And at that point I was like, no. And he was like, you gotta try it. It's amazing. And like wouldn't give up until I tried his
Are you still vaping?
No. No, but I also, I so vividly remember he was like, it's great. You can do it on airplanes. And I was like, oh, I don't think you can. And he was like, no, you absolutely can. And I went,
you can do it on airplanes full of prisoners being transported.
But I just remember saying to him, I was like, oh no, I think you can do it on airplanes. I don't think they'll let me do it on airplanes.
You know, when people are watching you scared as you go into the bathroom on a plane, you can, once you're in that bathroom, you can whatever do whatever you, do. You want.
Yeah.
John Cusack does have a terrible death scene in this. His eyes have been plucked out.
Yeah.
Jackie Chan tries not very hard to free him.
No. It seemed like there were leather straps holding his hands and Jackie
chains.
Chan, yeah, but
chains.
Like Jackie Chan just went for the chains with a knife, and I was like, I don't think that's gonna work.
It's also one
there
of,
might be another way.
I agree.
I think there's like three. Well, there's two that I'm sure of, but three possibly mercy killings in this film. So you've got Falco going over the cliff with Foy.
Yeah.
then you've got Jackie Chan in this scene shooting John Cusack with an arrow in the face. I'm sorry,
take
everybody. And then there's also a scene early on, at some point when Jackie Chan and John Cusack are talking, they flash back to Jackie Chan and his sister when he was young trying to escape from somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Jack, like,
did he kill her?
That's
the thing. I think he was saying she was too loud, so they got caught. But all you see is him smothering her.
Yeah, it seems like they imply that he smothers his sister.
Wait, this is that scene from MASH? It was a baby.
I thought it was like she wouldn't be quiet, and he was holding her mouth, and then they were like, who's that crying baby? It's her. And then they killed her. But then they would have killed him as well.
And also the way they choose to tell that story is to show him covering her mouth with his hands,
and then her feet kicking.
Yeah.
So
he's the murderer. He's a villain.
And then when he was doing it, he was like, I'm a nice guy. I'm a good brother.
But again, the whole thing is told in the sort of context of a story of him telling about, like, we've all got, you know, troubles.
We've all got things.
Some of us have killed our sisters.
Some of us accidentally.
And by the way, that's a motivation for him to want peace forever because he murdered his sister.
Yeah. It really explains why he started the Silk Road Protection Squad.
The SRPS.
My God. This movie.
Yeah, I'm a member of the SRPS. What are you talking about? SRPS here to take care of things.
Oh, my gosh. Well, obviously, there's a lot to be said about this movie. We obviously have opinions, but there are people out there with a different opinion. Now it's time for second opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit.
This is so good.
This person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. Second opinion.
That is John Lajoie, who is in the car with me and that ghost monkey, and also who has five songs right now in the Lego movie. Five original songs. Yeah, awesome. So.
Lego 2?
Lego 2.
Sweet.
Congrats, John.
John Lajoie, killing it. All right, here is a great review. It's a little bit long, but I think it's worth it. It is titled Hot Mess with a Heart of Gold, 5-star review. I am a professional ancient historian, and I can assure everyone that the accuracy is not part of the equation here.
I just want to interrupt for one quick second. Dan, did you write this?
The plot is often incoherent and one gets the impression that the background research consisted of watching Gladiator a couple of times. The moral is dropped repeatedly like an anvil tied to a quasi-Vitruvian crane into the audience, and the revisionism and Chinese nationalism is pretty thickly spread. But oh, if you take it for what it is, a big, hammy movie with its heart firmly located in the right place, then it is incredibly fun. I was not bored. I was touched. I was entertained. Yes, it's wildly inaccurate. No, you can't do that with swords. Parthia was the first century BC. It was not ruled by a woman. Carthia has nothing to do with the dynastic struggle between Crassus' brothers over the consulship. Wait, what? And Crassus was not in Parthia to sign a peace treaty. Rome did not, as it happens, have a national anthem, but the movie gets points for passable Latin grammar and said anthem. I could go on and on, but again, that's not the point.
Wow.
The sincere wish is to tell a story about how East and West and places in between can learn to treat each other with respect, and the scenery-chewing campiness is a likability factor that makes makes the inaccuracy kind of fun. It's a lot better than Disney's Hercules and that awful Eagle movie. I don't know what that is.
What? Iron Eagle? Eagle movie.
I anticipate
some... it was Iron Eagle. Jason Gedrick and Louis Gossett Jr.
I anticipate some very interesting conversations with my students about this thing. 5 stars.
I mean, are you going to make your students watch it?
If I was in a class...
I didn't write that, but he does speak for me.
If I was in a class and my professor made me watch this movie, I would drop out of college.
You would be like that kid who dropped the book. That would be the equivalent of that.
This is not worth learning. You've misunderstood what learning is, buddy.
I love the fact that he's like, I really enjoy that review because he's come to it with the right. He clearly knows a lot and it's taken, but he's
he sees all the faults.
I completely agree with that review.
Well, that's a great, I love that reveal that that is a made up Latin anthem.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
They were like, when they were making it up, they were like, we need it to be at least like 4.5 minutes long.
Just like every song in this movie.
Yeah. The reviews here are pretty pedestrian. So they only have 2 that are really good. This one is from Jilly, and it's just titled Dragon Blade. Peace at last. I call upon all of you to come together from foe to friend. And so whatever way, we shall create heaven on earth as it was in the beginning, now until forever, love will prevail. This is not a movie about war. It is an epic story of the hero's journey. All hail our fathers and mothers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters. One word. We are all one love. Loving you forever. Love, Jilly. 5 stars.
Great. Wow. Thanks, Jilly.
Wow. Jilly really got
just
in there.
Just took some time to just like motivate us.
A message of real love.
I also just don't understand. Like, they made a big deal out of this Heaven on Earth. It didn't seem like Heaven on Earth.
It just
seemed like a work camp where people got along.
Yeah, it seemed like everyone got on really well. And there was something sort of, I also do love like the other review mentioned, like the Chinese nationalism, like those moments where they're just like, where they're talking to John Cusack about like, you're Romans, you kill people. We're Chinese, we just save people. I was like, I think war was pretty common throughout the ancient world.
I did a little research too. The Silk Road, they were killing people. The Han Dynasty, which is what what Jackie Chan works for, were brutal. Like, and that's no big deal.
It's no, everyone was. That was the time. Yeah. That's what we were doing. We were cutting off heads.
It's like, a bizarre thing to be like, and we were the
agents of peace.
When armies would come, he'd be like, hey, want to like get some dinner?
We were part of the protection squad. Guys, we are good guys.
It's such a bizarre, it is a bizarre way to rewrite history.
Yeah.
In such, like, it's just like, but what are we hiding from?
Yeah, to what
like,
end?
Yeah, to yeah. what
yeah.
end?
I mean, But
I'm so happy to have watched this movie. It's unlike anything else because very rarely do you see like a $65 million big budget, big action movie that is shoving all these things in there because it is, you have everything that
it's
you kind
so
of want.
It's so cluttered. It is so cluttered with extraneous characters and plot lines and nonsense. There's just, it's bloated and crazy. Did it do well? I'm assuming in China it did massively well.
Well, you know, first of all, there's a couple of facts here. The budget, like I said, was $65 million. The opening weekend here in the States in only 14 theaters was $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
But the domestic, oh wait, no, maybe it was $30
million? No.
No. Couldn't have been. All right. Oh yeah, sorry. So what it grossed worldwide was $121 million.
Yeah.
So
wow.
Huge, huge success.
Yeah.
This movie came in 409th place of all the movies made in 2015. Normally, we've never done any of the movies that are below 200.
We really
dropped down.
That's got to be domestic box office.
That's based on domestic. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And this is the top movies of 2015 are The Force Awakens, Jurassic World, and Avengers Age of Ultron. And it was beaten on this show by movies like Furious 7, Jupiter Ascending, and The Boy Next Door.
I would watch this movie over Jupiter Ascending again any day.
Disagree.
Jupiter Ascending, I always applaud for, like, you're doing something. I don't always agree with what they're doing, but I'm on board.
Here's the thing.
That's how I felt about Aquaman.
We've lost so many hours to both of those movies.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've just, like, we're just... pouring our days away.
We are
on this nonsense.
You chose to do this.
I know. Well, now we're trapped.
Now you're just locked in.
Now we're trapped. It's awful.
The tagline of this movie, Dragon Blade. Would you like? I'll just read it to you.
Dragon Blade. Neither blade nor dragon. Just friends.
Anyone else want to take a shot?
I think I know it vaguely.
Okay. When Eagle meets the dragon.
Yeah.
What?
What? Yep.
Wait, is... Whoa,
so the
hang
dragon
on.
Is just China and the eagle is the Roman Empire.
So yeah. is Jackie Chan okay. supposed to symbolize the dragon blade?
I guess he
like
is
the dragon blade of China or whatever. Yeah. He's meant to... Oh, wow, that's interesting.
So when John Cusack tries to pick up his sword, he is really trying to pick up
the dragon blade. That is the dragon blade. We figured it out.
They just really threw it away.
It's interesting
really
because Jackie Chan wants to never use his sword.
Yes.
His preferred weapon is the guard, the arm guard thing.
Oh, yeah, that he keeps
on his belt.
Shield.
This movie does a lot of sword onto shield work. I feel like they're always like, oh, you're always seeing people like jam. Like, oh, wow, you got shield.
And like good accessorizing. Like that. There's one shot where like Jackie Chan resheathes somebody else's sword in the coolest, most aggressive way.
Does Adrian Brody kill himself at the end of the movie?
Yes.
With that, dying. But does he stab himself?
Yes.
So even in the final moment of the film, the victory over the true villain, Jackie Chan cannot commit that murder.
By the way, that was
Adrian Brody has to kill himself in order for Jackie Chan to win.
And why are
why
is that fight scene so anticlimactic? It's like, all right, let's see a fight. And
I actually didn't mind that.
Oh,
fight
really?
But I think I was just so happy to be watching. Like, I was aware. I was watching a lot of Adrian Brody in it.
Got it.
You're doing some cool sword stuff and you learn stuff. And
he practiced.
I was more into that.
They established, they were like, here is a man who has been fighting for like gotta be 2 hours at this point.
Yeah.
He is broken. He has been stabbed. He has been shot with arrows. And we are going to put him up against a perfectly healthy AB.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's not the best fight because it's mostly just AB kicking the shit out of him.
Yeah.
But not killing him
so
that he has another chance to get up again.
Yeah.
And then break his arm backwards, which was like,
I mean,
that I enjoyed.
I
had respect for that.
Yeah. Totally. And there was another shot in the movie that I liked where there was, just in terms of like, I like a good inventive death. And there was like one shot where somebody was like, somehow a gigantic bow and arrow was used to like shoot something through somebody's head at very close range. That was cool.
He used the guy's head to like pull back the bow and shoot someone in front.
I like when they built the transformer out of their shields. Oh, we can do this like the Rock. Everything is Rock. So they put a little guy in there.
That was my favorite thing.
It was like the
Roman shields are great against arrows, swords, but rocks fuck them up apparently. Like
they're like throw the rocks.
If only there had been more rocks around, the Roman Empire might not have.
Thank God they built those walls to figure out what rocks are. And then they were like, then it became like a comedy scene. Like, pick up this giant Ionic column. They're throwing columns.
Paul, I hate to interrupt. It's a Doric column.
This move.
How about when they put a rock on the shields and slide it through?
Yeah.
You could layer in Yakety Sax to 90% of this movie.
Please do. this is the seventh film that Jackie Chan has done with the word dragon in the title.
Thank God.
So. I did notice when I Googled it yesterday, I was like, this isn't even this is like the 10th Google search result that is being suggested.
Yeah, if you Google Jackie Chan
stuff,
dragon.
It's like,
Dragon Blade. I was shocked when I wrote the note like so late into the movie.
Yeah.
Wait, is there no dragon
that's
and
what
no
I wrote
blade?
I wrote that down too.
It was crazy. It had not even occurred to me that at no point do we see a dragon or a blade or hear what that is. I was just like,
I kept
blade,
expecting.
Whatever, then,
I kept expecting that to be
so. Because Dragon Blade would be such a boring title. Like if it was like Regum, you wouldn't be like, ooh, I want to go see Regum. No, like, you know, it has to seem like a fighting movie.
Regum sounds like it's a word backwards. Red Rum.
Yeah. I think we're going to be split on this. Dan, do you recommend people seeing this movie?
I do. I do for Adrian Brody's full commitment, for Jackie Chan's fighting, and for John Cusack just being John Cusack in this context. It's so good.
I want to just pile on what you're saying here. And I know we've talked about Adrian Brody in a few ways here, but I like the way that he commits. Nicolas Cage, I love Nicolas Cage, but he sometimes can go overboard, and I feel like Adrian Brody's doing the right level of like camp. It kind of feels like it's not like pulling you out. You're like, oh, you're gonna see
he's making
big choices.
Absolutely. I would endorse that.
What do you think?
I recommend seeing it.
Yeah, as a two-time
viewer, as a two-time date night viewer.
Oh God,
I'm crazy cool. You know, I'm gonna say, I
believe in this relationship.
it's built on good stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I'd watch it again.
You'd watch it again?
I mean,
give me a few years.
That's what I'm saying. Give me 2 years. I will forget everything that we just talked about. Yeah. I could watch it again and be reamused by all of it.
I can see that. I can see that.
June is shooting Grace and Frankie right now, and she was got home late last night, and when she got home, she walked in right at the part where Jackie Chan breaks Adrian Brody's arm, and she's walking in and she's like, what the fuck are you watching? And then just walked into the next room.
I didn't even wait.
There was a part of me that was a tiny bit relieved that she couldn't be here today, because I was like, I feel like Paul and Jason are going to be mad that they had to watch this movie, but I feel like June would be really mad if
when
we
I
made
saw
her
him
watch
that how subtitled it was. I was like, she is not going to be into this. Because also I was writing notes and then. Like, look up, like, what did I miss? And then I'd rewind, and then I'm like, now I'm like wasting time rewinding.
No, when you're rewinding a movie for this podcast, you're in bad shape. You're like just making the time longer. Oh.
Yeah. Jason, what do you think?
You know, I did not care for this. I don't disagree, though. It is a lot of fun. There is huge choices being made here.
Yes.
Adrian Brody is doing like next level craziness. Jackie Chan, I always am just delighted by. He is so compelling.
Yeah. It makes me want to watch a better Jackie Chan movie.
It made such a compelling screen presence. It's really great. Yeah. The movie is, sort of, I would say, watch it. Yeah, fast forward.
Yes, if you have a fast forward, because that will knock out a lot of the confusion, and I think you'll be happy.
I think fast forward through some of the kind of chaotic battle scenes.
But
I
watch
think you
all
can,
of the dialogue.
But watch every two-person scene. Yes. Watch all of the city being built friendship montages.
And anytime you see Falco.
Yeah, you got to stop for Falco and the little boy. Yeah.
Falco is Falco, also the name of the artist who sang Rock Me Amadeus. Yeah. Which I can only assume maybe this is that character. I would love it if the closing credits were just that actor singing Rock Me Amadeus.
Rock Me Amadeus. Rock Me Amadeus. And like, as he's falling. I'm in the same camp as Jason in the sense that it's so rare that you see a movie that is on this level making these choices. Like, you see it a lot more in smaller films, and I love that it's like it's trying to be nationalistic. I love that they clearly got these two actors in, you know, because they have international appeal, so they got them, and it's a real mishmash. It's a stew, and you know what? Stews may not be the thing that you go out to eat dinner and get, but it's
like
hearty and it's filling, and you know what? And it's going to fill you up and not let you down. So this is the stew of movies.
Put that on the Blu-ray box.
The stew of movies. Dan, you have a brand new show, which is hilariously funny on TBS called Miracle Workers.
Yes.
It premiered this week.
Oh, cool.
And you want to tell us about it?
Yeah. It's a show for TBS with myself and Steve Buscemi and Geraldine Viswanathan and Karen Soni and Lolly Adefope and lots of very, very funny people. Amazing writers. It's written by a guy called Simon Rich.
Who is hilarious in his books.
He created Man-Seeking Woman. And was a very prolific SNL writer.
Just one of the most brilliant, funny people that I've worked with. And
what is it about?
It's a comedy set in heaven. I play an angel who is working in like the department of answering prayers, which is a really shitty job to have, it turns out, in heaven. A series of events happen which end with God deciding to end the world and open a restaurant. That's his new thing, as he wants to do. And so we, over the course of the series, have to basically convince him not to through various.
And then season two is an episode of Kitchen Nightmares, it's God instead of Gordon Ramsay.
It's an anthology, so season two, if we are lucky enough to get one, we don't know what it would be yet, which is awesome. But we have it. So basically, TBS have let us make a super long movie with an ending and everything.
So
great. It's really, really cool.
That's every Tuesday night at 10:30, right?
10:30, yeah.
That's great. Aaron,
thank you.
What do you got? What do you want to tell people? Because you and I, we did this movie, Summer of 03. That came out on the DVD, which I don't know.
And on demand and on iTunes.
Oh, you can do all those things, too. Yeah, you can do all those things. I like, there is a niceness to have, like, a physical copy of it.
Yeah.
But there's nothing extra on it. That's why I'm
there's
always,
no extras?
I don't think so.
I didn't know.
Are there any extras on the VHS?
There is a lot of extras. On the, it's one of those double VHSs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But how can people follow you online and stuff like that?
Oh, I'm on Twitter. Your Twitter handle.
Oh, no. Wait,
you're
tweet,
terrible at
you
promotion.
You had a tweet that
I'm
made me
really
laugh.
Bad.
So you had a tweet of like where you predicted that the singer from Maroon 5 was going to take off his shirt.
Yeah, no, this genuinely happened. Halfway through the halftime show, I turned to my friend and I was like, is he going to like take off a shirt for each new song?
Yeah.
And then he did. And he didn't stop at the tank top.
Thank God.
I didn't do that.
Thank God.
Do,
otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to see his shark tattoo.
By the way, those are
California?
Fake tattoos. That's all I fake mean, tattoos.
It's fake
right?
tattoos, right?
No.
No.
It has to
no.
be, right?
We were no. having a debate. He, no, they looked fake.
Really?
To me.
I think you they're would, real. If those are fake, that's crazy.
I thought they were fake.
If those are like fake, he would be being roasted right now.
Yeah, that's only really like a teenager. Okay.
Is he being roasted right
he
now?
He has the word California written across his belly in like, I don't know, 76 font. It's
nothing,
so big.
Nothing will ever be like, well, A, obviously Ben Affleck's tattoo.
Yeah. Also, but that was a fake one.
No,
it's real.
Oh, was it?
That's real, Paul.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's I'm pretty sure it's real.
And also, if you don't, for the people who
it's
don't
know. It's a phoenix,
know,
right? Yeah.
Ed Sheeran also has crazy tattoos. Ed Sheeran has a lion in the middle of his chest, like a gigantic lion.
But to be fair,
the stuff you would not expect.
Neither Ben Affleck or Ed Sheeran have made me look at them in the middle of the Super Bowl.
No,
I guess you're right. These Adam Levine tattoos are.
I can't say
they're real.
They're real.
They're real.
Okay, good.
Wow,
you would do that.
I thought he was doing like a Cape Fear thing. Like, I'm going to put like funny tattoos. Not that that was a funny scene.
Wait a minute. That's what you think is funny. Do you think Cape Fear is a comedy?
Yeah, I mean, Rob, you know, that's like, how you got into comedy. It was like,
my other favorite,
remember, he's laughing in the movie theater? It's a comedy.
Like, it's a comedy. It's like a What About Bob, but a little scarier.
It's so many of my favorite comedians. Robert De Niro, Nick Nolte, Juliette Lewis.
When he gets his finger like caught in her retainer, it's like funny. It's so funny. Jason, what do you want to plug here?
I will plug, I don't know, you can... Oh, The Long Dumb Road is available now also on Blu-ray and all those things.
Those are great.
On demand or whatever.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that
thank
film.
You, Aaron. Yeah. I appreciate that. And then that's about it.
All right, great. And I will continue to plug Black Monday, which is on Sunday nights at 10 o'clock on Showtime. It's a show that I'm on with Don Cheadle, Regina Hall, and Andrew Rannells. It takes place in 1987 at the stock market crash. And this is the fourth episode this week. And I think you're starting to see a bunch of really fun stuff. If you can catch up on it right now, if you go to Showtime.com and enter in the code Black Monday, you can get free 30 days of Showtime on me.
Oh, wow.
On me. There you go. Black Monday.
Black Monday, all one word?
All one word. And you can get a free subscription there. And I think you'll really dig it. It's fun. And I love doing the show. And I'm so
great
excited.
Show. Crazy funny cast.
Yeah.
Super funny show. Hard, hard jokes.
Yeah. I had a very romantic scene with a man in a Mr. Metz costume, which I feel love that I got to do.
Which you had asked for.
I did. I just to be able to do a dramatic like monologue to a man in a full costume that you cannot read any emotion on their face, like, was one of my favorite things. Like, the shot is his face is in the front, like, is in the foreground, and I'm in the background over his shoulder, and you're just watching this
That's
monologue
great.
With no change of emotion.
That's so funny.
It's a fun show. So Showtime, Black Monday, every Sunday night. All right, that is the end of this conversation, but we want to continue the conversation with you. Make sure you listen to next week's mini episode where you can call in at 619-PAUL-ASK, leave your comments about Dragonblade or your comments about life, and I will answer your questions, concerns, life dilemmas. I'm here for you. And a big thank you to Avril Halley for pulling these clips and remembering that that Dan and Aaron wanted to do this movie. Also, Nate Kiley for doing the research on a movie that was so hard to do research for. Of course, Kelly Alto, Cody, who puts this whole show together as our producer, now a senior producer here at Earwolf, and Devin in the booth. We got a great team. Everybody here at Earwolf supports us, and we love that. So we'll see you next week for our mini episode. People, oh, make sure you follow us on Instagram too, because guess what? We got a brand new artwork up there from our friend Kyle Waldron. He's killing it nonstop. All right, and sign up for our mailing list because we have some announcements about some touring shows that are coming up. We will see you next week. Bye for now. That was our show. And remember, don't feel unsafe in your own home, apartment, condo, wherever you live, barn, above garage, all right? Because fear has no place in a home, and that's Simply Safe's mission from day one. You might have seen their commercial during the big game. If you didn't find it online, it's actually pretty funny. Or not funny, it's good. Simply Safe blankets your home in safety with around-the-clock professional monitoring that makes sure the police are on the way when you need them, not like an hour after the alarm goes off, okay? The Verge calls Simply Safe the best home security, and it's a Wirecutter top pick, and you know me, I'm a Wirecutter boy. So I love it. So when Wirecutter says it's good, I say it's good. I already liked it. Wirecutter just confirmed it. Protect your home today and get free shipping at simplysafe.com/bonkers.
Hey, there's great stuff happening over on Never Not Funny, and now's the time to check it out. If you don't know the show, comedian Jimmy Pardo jokes around with his sometimes famous, always funny friends. It's a free-flowing conversation built around Jimmy's knack for always finding the funny. Recent guests include Darcy Carden, Alfred Molina, Ace Frehley of Kiss, and Chris Elliott. Plus, you'll find Earwolf favorites like Scott Aukerman, Andy Daly, Janet Varney, and Dave Holmes in the mix. This week's guest is Stephen Merchant, who you know from The Office, Extras, and the new movie Fighting With My Family. Check out Never Not Funny on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.